Hi there. Thank you for downloading Garden Fork Radio. If this is your first time here, Garden Fork is a very eclectic mix of DIY and home improvement and fix-it stuff, plus cooking and gardening and whatever else pops into my head. This week is a special episode. I am actually really jammed with work, and I am a guest on the Popular Mechanics podcast, the most useful podcast ever, which was a total blast. And Rick and Will, who's from the Weekend Homestead YouTube channel, was nice enough to get together and make a Garden Fork Radio episode for you all because I was too jammed with work to take care of that. So a big thank you to Rick and to Will. I have not heard this show, okay? So I'm going to record the intro and then pop this onto the front of their show and then hit the go button. Ready? Here we go.
All right, you ready to go?
I guess so. What's your name again?
Oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, how are you, Will?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, sir?
Never better. This is Rick and Will for the Garden Fork podcast. Eric is not with us today. He is actually off doing a podcast with, who is it, Will?
He's doing a podcast with Popular Mechanics. I think he's going to talk about it in a future radio show. And then he's also, I think if you listen to the podcast from Popular Mechanics, you can pick it up there also.
All right. Yeah, you know, they have, they used to have two podcasts at Popular Mechanics. They only have one now, but I'm not sure which one they dropped. So, but yeah, it'll be easy to find and we'll talk about it later. Or Eric will talk about it when he finds out when they're going to put it up.
Most definitely.
So, yeah. So how are you today, Will?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, sir?
Never better. Things are bright and sunny here in Virginia Beach. Things are not so bright and sunny maybe for people in other parts of the country.
Yeah. You know, if you look at the news lately, there's been on the West Coast, all the fires and stuff going on with that. And then our friends down in Texas just recently got hit with a hurricane, and our friends down in Florida are preparing for, you know, hurricane season to kind of kick off here. And we got some pretty serious storms on the water. So it'll be interesting to see, and hopefully, you know, it curves and stays off land, but it's looking like it might hit directly onto Florida. So definitely time to get prepared.
Yeah. I'm kind of a weather geek. And so I love this kind of thing, being prepared. In fact, she who must be obeyed refers to me as Battery Bob most of the time.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, in different parts of the country, you have different levels of preparedness for different types of things. Like for us in the Midwest, you know, we have thunderstorm season during the summer, and then during the winter we have blizzard and snow season, really are kind of our two. And then, you know, for the folks in Florida, they have a completely different set of them. And the people on the West Coast have earthquakes and fires and things like that. So it's kind of interesting how preparedness and kind of getting ready for everything kind of changes depending on your geographic.
Well, the things you need to do change, but the basics are really kind of there all the time, aren't they? One of the things that annoyed me a little bit about a lot of people down in Texas maybe was, you know, people need to be prepared to survive on their own for 3-4 days without any help from anybody, because that's, you know, it's going to be, you know, a lot of trouble getting people, you know, a place like Houston, place like Miami. Of course, right now, if I were in Miami, well, I'd be crazy. I'd be moving on, I think, on up the road.
Yeah, it's interesting because the timing of our show actually lines up with kind of September is National Preparedness Month.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, their theme this year is disasters don't plan, but you can. So I thought maybe we could talk about a couple of things that anybody could do to kind of get ready for a disaster, because disasters can be tons of different things. They could be natural disasters like earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, those types of things. And disasters can be something very local to you, like a house fire or a car breaking down, or even something happening in your family where, you know, something could happen, like one of your children gets sick or a family member gets sick. And then, you know, you have to kind of take care of everything while your spouse or a family member is, you know, in an area of need. So, you know, you have a scenario where that could even be a local disaster. I wouldn't say disaster, but something you need to be prepared for. So
that's true.
You know, I think that's probably something we should talk about today.
Sounds good to me. You sent me quite a long list here. You're the most thoughtful person that we've ever had on the radio, I think.
I'll tell you this. I live with the Boy Scout motto of always be prepared. I was a Boy Scout, made it through, and that was kind of one of those things I grew up with. So going from that into the fire service and being a firefighter for 10 years and involved with the hazmat team for 15, you kind of get involved with these types of situations as an aid worker, and it kind of brings you to the awareness of some simple things that people can do to kind of get ready. And, you know, that's just kind of always been my mantra, is be prepared for, you know, whatever, even if it's just simple things. So,
yeah, you know, in the Navy, we spent a very long time on Guam, and we had major typhoons that passed over us, and had an enormous, I forget, what was a 9-point-something earthquake. And then I was actually mayor of Dog City when we evacuated the Philippines after Pinatubo. So I've done a little bit of disaster relief work myself.
Well, this would be a perfect topic for us to discuss today.
Okay, well, let me see. Number one you have here is identification and figure out what disasters are in your area. I think we kind of gone over that. You know, I noticed this morning on the news that there was a big earthquake down in Mexico.
Yeah, that was, you know, it's one of those things where you got to figure out what is in your area and what could be, you know, the issue you run into. Like in Minnesota, we have, you know, potentially tornadoes. We have, you know, severe storms during the summertime. In the winter, we have blizzards. And then during the football season, we have the Vikings football season. So, I mean, all three of those are really kind of disaster times for us. So,
yeah. Yeah. And here in Virginia Beach, we don't get much snow. We get a lot of ice. You were really kind of on a peninsula with the bay on one side and the Atlantic Ocean on the other. And so our temperatures are kind of moderated, but we don't get snow. We get ice. And then we have not really done a good job getting our power underground. And so the lines are strung everywhere. And the first thing that happens is a tree limb breaks off and then lands in the power lines. And we're out of power for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, that is a big one on the East Coast. I see, you know, you get a snowstorm through or whatever, and they talk about, you know, 50,000 people without power for a certain number of days. And, you know, a good amount of time when we're talking about identifying to get ready for being prepared, you don't have to prepare necessarily for 6 months of something or 90 days of something, even something as simple as being prepared for 3 or 4 days. Because even if you looked at some of the storms and some of the different things that have happened, if a person could give themselves 3 to 4 days of preparation that they could be self-sufficient, that gives a lot of time where, let's say, a storm rolls through for the construction crews to clear the trees off the roads or get the power lines back up and running, you know, those type of things. Yes, there are disasters that the power is out for more than, you know, 3 or 4 days, but for a majority of the things out there, about 75% of the things that you would possibly encounter in life, 3 to 4 days is about the right amount of time to be kind of prepared for you and your family.
Right. Yeah. And let me see. We've got a lot of things on your list here. Let's go to, I guess, number one, power and light. That makes a good sense.
Yeah, that's one that actually I like to credit Eric from Garden Fork for, because he had some videos regarding tuning up your generator and putting in a transfer switch. And for us, it was a scenario where we live in a place where, just like you guys, where the power lines are up in the air. Mm-hmm. They're up in the air for us also. And we don't really lose power that much during the summer. But if we get a snowstorm and there's some heavy snow, branches fall on the lines, and then we could be without power. I think the shortest amount of time we've been without power at the property has been, you know, an hour or two. And the longest was about 48 hours, just because they had to clear all the lines, get everything back up and running, get everything connected and working again. So we put in a transfer switch after watching Eric's video that he had on it. And actually, it's a lot simpler of an install than you think. Now, granted, if you don't know a lot about electricity, I'd recommend having somebody professional do it. But quite honestly, it's within the realm of a person who has an average amount of handy ability to get something like that installed, or get a professional, like I said, to help you install something like that.
Yeah, you know, we have just a small generator and a window mount air conditioner, and we slide the window mount air conditioner into the master bedroom window and run it off the generator. And we actually just have really prepared one room, the master bedroom, where we will survive whatever happens there. And it's not just an air conditioner, it's a heat pump, so it will both heat and cool. And that helps keep us pretty cool, and it's not that much trouble to do. But I admire the transfer switch idea, and I'm thinking I need to do something like that, or at least do a through the wall plug for the bank of plugs that I have that are just for the generator. So.
Definitely. And one thing I think a lot of people forget about on the generator side of it is extension cords. Oddly enough, if you have the generator outside and you need to run it up to your refrigerator or something else inside the house, it might be more than 100 feet away. Because I'll tell you, safety wise, you never want to use a generator inside your garage or inside your house. And quite honestly, you want to keep it on the downwind side of your house, because the exhaust fumes can actually cause issues. There's been a number of cases where people have had generators and they've been using them in their garage, or they had them next to a basement window or whatever it is, and people have ended up getting carbon monoxide poisoning or worse because of the fumes from it. So besides having a generator, having an extension cord that can carry the load of what you're, you know, running to, and you don't necessarily want to have those old-fashioned lamp cords, you know, and a whole bunch of them all kind of chained together with duct tape going out to your generator, you know, pick up some nice extension cords and just have them around the house, because they're good for projects. But then if you ever get in an emergency situation, you can bring power into your house if you don't have a transfer switch or anything.
Right. And I think the recommendation is to keep your generator at least 15 feet away from the house, so that it,
yep,
you know, you don't had the fumes. And downwind is always a good idea. It's always tough though in a hurricane, to because the winds are shifting so much, and particularly when the eye goes over, if you're right in the path of it. But that's the least of your problems, keeping a generator running if you're in the eye of a hurricane, I imagine.
Sure. And a lot of people talk about things like, I'll just get a whole bunch of candles in my house and so on. And quite honestly, I actually recommend to people, and when we do preparedness things for with the fire department and so on, we actually recommend for people to use flashlights more than candles. Candles are cheap and easy, and you can light one and put it in there, and it gives you a good ambiance, and it will give you light. But I've never had a situation where I knocked a flashlight over and started a fire accidentally in my house. So it's just kind of something to think about when you're looking at emergencies. That, and I've seen people who have had the candles that have like the scent where it's like, you know, Garden Valley or like spring, you know, rain or something like that. And in the middle of the disaster, you know, they're getting the candles burning for hours on end, and all of a sudden your eyes are burning because of all the incense and stuff that's in the air. So, you know, if you do use candles, try to get unscented ones. But I always recommend flashlights because they're portable, they're easy. You can even give them to kids. You know, I'd never give our 5-year-old, hey, here's a candle and head off to the bathroom. You know, instead, here's a flashlight and, you know, he's good to go.
Sure. And, you know, the electric lanterns now are all LED, and so they will run forever with a just one set of batteries. And so it's really pretty useful, and they're pretty cheap now too, you know, to pick up one or two when in the off season and keep them around and keep them supplied with batteries. And of course, batteries is the next big thing. She Who Must Be Obeyed refers to me generally this time of year as Battery Bob, because I run out and buy batteries for everything, fresh batteries every time there's a storm, it seems like.
Yeah, I actually was going to ask you, how do you store your batteries? Because I hear a lot of rumors about, oh, keep them in your refrigerator, or keep them in a box, keep them in the bottom of a closet. Being a battery expert as yourself, where do you keep your batteries?
I keep them in the original wrapping, and I just put them on a shelf. So there's nothing secret. I think the old batteries, it was beneficial to actually refrigerate them or freeze them. But, you know, now it's not necessary, and they last forever just sitting on the shelf.
an interesting item to note is, so in a cold climate like where we are, where, you know, a couple of years ago we had a scenario where we went for 7 days and the warmest temperature was negative 10 Fahrenheit.
Oh my.
You know, the county actually recommended opening all of your faucets in your house just to trickle so water continued to flow through, so none of the pipes froze or anything like that. But one of the things that we learned regarding batteries is, instead of using the regular alkaline batteries in your flashlights, like if you have a flashlight in your car or if you have a flashlight out in the garage or something like that that you're using for emergency scenarios, to actually use lithium ion batteries, the little blue ones, I think, that you can see, you can pick them up at the big box store. But those batteries actually handle cold temperatures better. So if you have an alkaline battery in a flashlight and it gets super, super cold, it potentially will make the battery so it won't work as long or be as bright versus the lithium ion batteries, which the cold range actually dips a little bit lower than the alkaline range, mm-hmm. which will give you a little bit better use in cold weather. So for any of our friends listening in the cold weather area, if you have a problem with batteries outside, try lithium ions. They're a little bit more expensive, but I'd rather have a reliable battery than a dead battery.
Yeah, I had no idea. I appreciate that. Wow. And then... let me see, what else do we need to talk about? Extension cords, right?
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah,
Make sure you have them. The other thing on extension cords too, and this is a common one, is getting one that's correct for your load. And I made commentary to the cord that you'd use for a lamp, but you know, the real light cord that's kind of brown or white, and you can get them at the store and you use them for, you know, plugging in lights. I've seen people try to run equipment and things like that with those. And we actually had a gentleman who had a couple of those in his garage that he was using for some equipment, and it actually melted the shielding off of it and started a fire in his garage. So
ooh, wow.
My recommendation is, there's something called gauge on wire, which is the lower the number, the bigger the wire. So most extension cords are about 14 gauge wire. And then you can get like a heavier, more contractor size, which is a 12 gauge wire. If you're running something like an air conditioner or something that draws a lot of power, like if you plug it in or turn it on and the lights dim a little bit in your house, you're going to want a bigger cord versus, you know, a simple thing like a fan. You can probably get away with a regular size extension cord, but that's another safety piece. The other thing is get the bright colored ones, because then they're less of a trip hazard.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that I have done with my generator is I have a three-pronged lock-in plug on it that's actually 110. It's usually, you see these in 220. And I run that into the house, and it's actually a marine grade extension cord used for boat charging, and it works like a champ, and it is you know, really a lot of good amps passing through, and it locks in so you don't knock it loose, and it also locks in so it's not wet. You know, it has a screw bezel on the front of it, so you kind of tie it in, and so it helps with those electrical shock problems. I remember in Guam, everything was going pretty well for us. And one of my neighbors that didn't have a generator, her next door neighbor, it wasn't me, it was the person on the other side of us, offered her the extension cord of friendship to kind of get her power going over in the house. And she walked right into a big puddle while the engine was running. And even though she was holding the extension cord and not actually contacting the metal, there was enough there to electrocute her. And, you know, she didn't die, but she went down hard, and we're a little concerned about her. So you have to, you know, think about the things you do with electricity. You just can't, you have to be smart about it. That's a good way to say it.
Most definitely. Yeah. One question for you. In your area, do the officials recommend locking your generator to something? Have you heard of that?
You mean so someone won't steal it? That happens a lot here. All of a sudden, you have the most coveted thing in the neighborhood. Ours is always in the backyard, so it's you know, it'd be hard for somebody to steal it without causing a ruckus with the dogs and stuff.
Sure. One of the news shows in our area did a little thing about storm season, and they always talk about it in the springtime and in the fall time when winter's coming. And one of the things that actually they recommended that I really never thought of is buying a cheap bike lock, you know, and just wrapping it around a tree and then wrapping it around the generator. And, you know, that's enough deterrent for somebody to just, you know, grab it and run with it or whatever. But I guess there was a rash of them when St. Paul, we had a small tornado go through St. Paul, which is one of the Twin Cities. And one of the biggest problems that they had was people would have a generator sitting out by their garage behind their house, and then the cords running up, you know, 200 feet, and they were in the house, and all of a sudden their power would go out, and they go outside and the cords are laying there and the generator was gone. Somebody drove by with a truck, picked it up, threw it in the back, because, you know, generators can be expensive. They can range anywhere from as cheap as $250 up to, you know, $800 or $1,000. And it was easy pickings for some of the thieves. So that's one of the things you might want to think about when you're in a disaster. You don't need one disaster and then have another one happen while you're in the middle of one.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to imagine what that'd be like when the, you know, you it just all of a sudden the silence of no generator, and you look out and some guy's carrying your generator away.
Well, that, and I mean, a lot of times the EMS or the fire department or the police department are really taxed with the scenario, so the response times tend to be a little slower. And that was kind of what the news organization was pointing out, is, you know, to make sure that you lock your doors on your house and, you know, you keep your stuff secure, because quite honestly, in the moment of a disaster, unfortunately, some folks do take advantage of the opportunity to take advantage of other people. So that's kind of a personal safety thing more than anything else.
Yeah. Oh, say it ain't so, huh?
Yeah.
One of the things I've been really impressed with folks down in Texas and Houston is the lack of any real crime problems. Lots of times people take advantage of these situations, and you just read about how all everybody's being a good neighbor, and things are getting along pretty well, even though they're facing a lot of hardship down there. So, but you know, not every place is like that, and not every situation is going to end up happy.
Sure. Let's talk about food and water for a little bit.
Oh, okay.
So you and I were talking off the air a little bit about water, and I think it was yesterday we were discussing a couple of different things. One of the things I found online when we were kind of getting ready for the show is there's a website called ready.gov, which is actually a really good resource. We'll link to it in the show notes. But the short of it is that it has all sorts of different scenarios that you can go through, and it talks about all the different things you possibly would need. So if you live on the West Coast and there's tornado or there's fires and there's earthquakes or there's family emergencies, it gives you some pointers to think about. And then if you live in the Midwest or on the East Coast, same thing. But one of the things they talk about a lot on the site is water, and what they're recommending for people is to have 1 gallon of water per person for 3 days. So for our family, since we have 4 people, I would need 12 gallons of water, or a way to store about 30 to 36 gallons of water for our household, which in all reality isn't that much, because if you throw it in a closet or you get some bottles of water, things like that, it's something easy to deal with, because you can use it to flush your toilet, you can use it to cook with, you can bathe with it, and of course drink it. So, you know, it's something to think about, that a lot of people think, oh, I'll just buy a flat of bottled water. Well, that's not as much water as you think you would need. It's actually better to potentially buy some bigger jugs of water, or, you know, gallons of water to kind of store, so you're a little prepared on that side.
Sure. Or have yourself a rain barrel. You might not want to always drink it, depending on how assiduous you are about keeping things clean and keeping it fresh and that kind of stuff. But, you know, you can always use it to flush the toilets. And we always fill our bathtub with water so that we have something there to flush the toilets with. We have rain barrels, and we have bottled water. And we keep a lot of chlorine bleach around this time of year. You can make almost any water drinkable if you have bleach. And so, you know, you probably wouldn't want to use really muddy, murky, E. coli infested water. That would not be tasteful. But, you know, if you have bleach, you can make any water drinkable in the end.
What's usually the ratio you guys use for water to bleach?
You know, I have a book that tells me that, but I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Curious. Yeah. Do you guys boil your water too then? Because I know that that's one thing where I've read of somebody having a rain barrel outside or, you know, water stored for their garden. And then they go out there and get some water, bring it in and boil it. And then they use it for different things. Do you guys boil water where you are also?
We can do that. One of the things we did when we moved in is laid in gas. This was an all electric house when we moved in. And by laying in gas, we can have dual fuels for whatever we're doing. And boiling water is pretty easy when the even when the electricity is out. On Guam, we used to have they didn't have enough power for everybody. And particularly around 6 o'clock, our power in the naval housing would drop out for an hour and a half, right about dinner time. And so we kept a little portable propane stove on the counter. And when the power dropped out, we just move over to the propane stove and finish up cooking so that, you know, it just was a habit. And we still have that stove. And so we have both the natural gas laid on, we have our propane stove, and of course we have our charcoal grills outside. I will cook almost anything on the grill if I get a chance.
Yeah, in the right emergency, it becomes a backyard barbecue almost for a lot of folks.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because you want to eat your frozen stuff, you know, get it out and use it. I became a master of the charcoal grill frozen pizza for a while on Guam. We had like three or four of them, and it was a good way to use them, and they thaw out pretty quick.
Yeah, that's one thing a lot of people, you know, don't think about necessarily is they're thinking, okay, how am I going to cook inside my house? But a lot of people have a gas grill outside or a charcoal grill, and you can just adapt some of the things that you're cooking inside, outside. I know Eric's got tons of different videos on cooking like the steak on the charcoal and cooking on the grill and things like that. So, I mean, those types of things you can also do during the disaster because it's normally light outside during the day and you can fire up the charcoal grill. You never want to use a charcoal grill in the house or the gas grill inside the house, but, you know, outside you're perfectly fine. So,
sure. And around here, when the power drops out in the summer, it's miserable. It's just sticky wet inside the house and gets that way pretty quick. And so you don't want to be heating up the house anyway. So we'll move outside to cook.
Well, that actually makes me think of something and takes us kind of to the next item on our list as we're getting to the bottom here, which is clothing. One of the things that I always talk about, at least in our area, and I know that you were talking about it too, because of the air conditioning and things like that, because that's a situation, which is you can't necessarily have the air conditioning running all the time or the heat running all the time for us. And I always use the phrase, wet is cold, is one of the phrases that we use a lot up in the area where we are because of the winters and things like that. So if you can keep your gloves dry, you can keep your feet dry, you'd be surprised how warm you'll stay outside. The second you get wet, unfortunately, you tend to get cold in a lot of scenarios. So having the right clothing and things like that available to you, you know, we had the power go out for a number of days and we only heated the house with the fireplace. And, you know, to have an extra sweatshirt you could throw on or extra pair of socks or, you know, those type of things. Or if you have to go outside to do some work outside or whatever it is, having the right clothing, even in your car as you're driving somewhere, makes all the difference when you're stuck in an emergency because it's miserable if you're sweltering hot or if you're freezing cold and then you're also dealing with whatever the situation is.
Sure. And, you know, one of the things we have occasional tornado warnings here, particularly when hurricanes pass through. They'll we'll have tornadoes. And we'll always, we have a special, we call them our emergency boots. And they're a steel shank. There's a steel plate in the bottom of them. And they lace up. And we at least put on jeans and, you know, long jeans and our emergency boots and a long sleeve shirt. Just in case we have to take cover, we have a little bit of protection. But if things go really south, you know, you don't want to be walking around on debris and broken glass and nails sticking up everywhere in flip-flops. And so you need to go ahead and, you know, take a little bit of time to prepare because when you when things go south, they go south pretty fast. And so you got to be careful.
Sure. Moving on to kind of one of the last items on our list here. And a lot of people don't talk about this very much, but it was an idea actually that my parents came up with for our kids in disasters. And I kind of wanted to share it a little bit because everybody talks about, oh, make sure you have food, make sure you have water, make sure you have heat and you have a way to, you know, be safe and energy and generators and gear and all this kind of stuff. But a lot of people don't talk about kids in disasters. And I'll be honest with you, we've lived through a couple of different disasters. I know I joke about the Vikings football season, but we've had our house hit with a tornado. We've been through many severe thunderstorms. We actually had a house fire at one point in time years back. And one of the things that we kind of came out of this with was an idea my parents had, which was something for the kids. You take a plastic box and you put in little Lego kits and crayons and markers and drawing stuff. And we call it the busy box. And what it is when there's a disaster, kids are under a lot of stress because the parents are under a lot of stress. They don't know what to do. It's usually pretty scary. And what we found works really well to kind of keep them, one, busy, and two, feel a little bit better about the scenario and everything else, is we get out the busy box and the first thing that comes out of it is their own flashlight. It's their flashlight. They can take it wherever they want. They can do whatever they want with it. You know, something really easy for them to do, because in the dark, kids can get scared really easily. If you have a flashlight, it works really well. And then to have projects that they only do when there's a disaster. So it almost became kind of like they started looking forward to it. Like the power went out and they're like, can we get out the busy box? We want to work on this or draw our crayons and do little art things or play little games. And then when it's over, you put everything back in the box and put it in the closet and then go back to kind of regular life. And I don't want to say it gives something the kids to look forward to, but it gives them something to do during the disaster. And it's one of the things that I think a lot of people may miss is the little people in their lives. You know, they're used to certain structures, they're used to certain securities and things like that. And you know, mom and dad and the family supporting, you know, them and everything else. Well, now in a scenario where you might be focused on fixing the hole in the roof because of the storm or something like that, and you're not necessarily paying full attention to the kids, now you have a way to keep them busy, occupy, keep their minds off the situation. So one thing I kind of recommend is maybe making a little box of all sorts of little trinkets and fun stuff that kids can do only during when the disaster happens. When it's done, close it up and put it away.
Wow, that's a really great idea. We didn't have kids, so I never had to think about that. But yeah, we do have pets. We have dogs. And so you need to make sure that you prepare them as well. One of the things we do when if it looks like there may be storms or something in the area is we have one that's particularly prone to panicking during thunderstorms. And we'll give him a little doggy downer, really, to calm him down. But we always put their harness and leash on them so we can control them and get a hold of them, get them in the right place. And we always make sure we have plenty of their food around to take care of them. So you need to plan for your entire family and kind of plan for the worst case scenarios just in case.
Yeah, definitely. When you, I know a lot of people have fenced yards and they let their dogs run into the backyard and things like that. I've heard of some dog owners getting, it looks like a wire screw that kind of screws in the ground that you can hook a chain to and kind of let them have a shorter run area. So normally if your pet had full rein of the backyard, instead now during that scenario, you could make the leash shorter in case there's debris in the backyard and you want to keep them in a shorter area, but you don't want to necessarily hold the leash all the time. Have you ever seen that or used those types of things?
Well, we actually have two of them and we use them mostly because our fence falls down all the time. We're just inches above the water level here, and the trees grow huge root systems, but they grow horizontally. They don't grow deep. And so as soon as we get a big wind, the trees will blow over, and most of the time they'll hit the power lines. And as they crash through the power lines, they'll crash through our fence. So we've had to rebuild the fence two or three times. So we've had to have dog ties to stake them out so they don't take off on us. Well, can you think of anything else? A lot of people are fleeing the storms now. This is what we have, Irma and Jose right behind it. And there's another one in the Gulf that's crossing, across Mexico somewhere. So it's going to be a busy season. Then the entire western, part of the United States seems to be on fire right now. So it's,
yeah.
I feel for everybody in the path of these things, and, I wish you well and hope that you all stay prepared.
Definitely. I've looked at some of those photos, and just to see how much area is on fire on the West Coast. And I know a lot of people are focused on the hurricanes, but those wildfires, I mean, I don't want to say the whole state of Montana is on fire right now, but it, from the photos, it looked like, you know, Montana and Oregon and Washington State are really getting hammered with the fires this year.
Yeah. And even Los Angeles having a big fire problem and burning in pretty close to the city. So a lot of people at risk, and a lot of people that need to think about these things just in case. You know, there are other kinds of disasters that you should prepare for that you don't really think about on a regular basis. And, you know, you kind of touched on those. You said you had a house fire once, and, you know, we both have fireplaces. And so, you know, it's important to make sure your smoke alarms are well batteried, and you change them every now and then. And that we have a CO2 alarm just in case the, you know, something happens with our fireplace to alert us that there's something wrong. And then you also need a just some way to stay informed. You know, we're all thrilled that we have the internet, and things are working both hunky and dory all the time, or most of the time, but you need to go back to the old ways and have a little battery-powered weather radio, and for both maybe dual bands, so it's you know, doing AM, FM, also does weather for you, so you can stay informed, also a little bit entertained, or keep your mind busy. So, you know, there are things that you need to do as well.
I will say on the weather radio piece too, the technology on them has actually increased pretty dramatically over the last couple of years. And a lot of people don't know this, but since 9/11, the infrastructure of the radio structure in the United States has been upgraded significantly because of some of the downfalls that have been found in the system and some holes in it. And one of the things that they added was regional-based weather radio. So now you can pick, you can go on to the weather.gov website, and they have something called Same Radio. And basically, it's a connection where you can go in and pick the county that you're in, and then pick the ailment that you want to be alerted of. So what I mean by that is, like, it'll have everything in there, like anything you can think of, like tornado watch, tornado warning, flash flood watch warning, hurricanes, all the different types of ailments, wildfires, anything that they would alert on. And you can pick the ailments that you want to listen for that are pertinent to you. And then you can also pick the areas. So instead of the alarm going off constantly and you're hearing about stuff that's happening 100 or 200 miles away from you, you can actually set it so that it only alerts you for the things that are happening in your locality. So we live in Hennepin County, which is in Minnesota. I have mine set to pick up severe weather, winter weather, flood information, and so on, because we don't really have wildfires here. So it skips all that other stuff and only alerts me when it is, so that then you don't get accustomed to listening to your radio, because that was one of the problems with them in the beginning, is they'd always be going off, right? And you'd be listening like, oh, that's not for me. So then you get kind of tuned out to it. Instead, now if it goes off, we know it's something important for where we are.
Wow, that's good to know. I had no idea they'd improved them that much. Mine's still the little analog wind-up radio. You know, it has a hand crank on the side so I can charge it if I need to. Also has a USB plug on the end, and I have tried charging my phone with that thing, and it takes a lot of cranks. You get a pretty good little workout doing that. But I had no idea. You know, speaking about cell phones, though, you know, the latest ones also do disaster alerts.
And actually, you can get an app too that'll allow you to listen to, let's say, the police or fire scanning radios and things like that. If you have an older weather radio, one thing you might want to do, Eric's got his new Amazon Garden Fork store set up, and I was going to send him a couple of notes of a couple of the newer radios. The price on these things is relatively inexpensive. I think some of them are $19.95 or $29.95 for a radio that will allow you to do all these new technologies like you're talking about. And it's not like, you know, a $100 radio that's going to make this work. I mean, the inexpensive radios now do this. So wow. It's a simple upgrade for your household.
Wow. Well, Battery Bob's going to have to get involved in this. I'll be rushing out to buy one soon.
Perfect.
Okay. Well, listen, I imagine if you're stuck in traffic trying to flee Miami. You're not at your destination yet, but for most people who are listening to this, probably they have gotten to where they're going. They need to get out of the car, so maybe we ought to wrap it up.
Most definitely. If you're looking to get a hold of Rick or myself, you can check out the Garden Fork group on Facebook. Rick and I are in there constantly posting different things that we're doing or things that we think are interesting, and it's a great way to get a hold of us. Send us a message on there or find us there. It'd probably be the easiest way. Otherwise, if you go to Garden Fork on YouTube, I know that Eric has a lot of videos on a lot of the stuff that we talked about today, so definitely check it out, and thanks for having us today.
You bet. And we'll talk to you later, my friend.
You too. Thank you. And if I don't talk to you before the weekend, have a good weekend, all right?
And stay safe.
See ya.
All right. Bye-bye.